you know, you take yourself wherever you go, and that everything is such a subjective journey. So we can just see how it goes.
It's fine with me.
Okay. Yeah.
Not a problem.
Okay.
All right. I'm pleased to welcome Walter Coffey to the Caregiving Smile Summit. We're going to be talking about how to choose long-term care. Walter is president and CEO of Leading Age Georgia, the Georgia Institute on Aging, and the Center for Positive Aging. He is one of 5% of association CEOs who is certified association executive. He's also the managing partner of WD International and a part-time instructor at the Gerontology Institute at Georgia State University in Atlanta. And there's much more, but let's get into the meat. You could read Walter's bio. He's a colleague and a friend, and welcome, Walter, to the Caregiver Smile Summit.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me to participate, and I'm really excited about this time we'll have together.
That's great. So let's just jump in. So, you know, choosing long-term care, you know, for us who work in the industry, it's maybe a bit easier, though, you know, it's still a hard thing to do. First of all, maybe for our viewers, there's a perception, I think, in the public that you think long-term care, you think one thing, which is a nursing home, and even if it's a CCRC they're visiting, they still group them all as if they're all one thing. And so maybe you could just distinguish what the levels are, first of all.
Okay. Well, I'm really glad that you put out that out there first, because one of the things that we continually have challenges with in our field is the whole idea of the variety of services and housing and programs that are out there. And people have different definitions for different things. And I hope that's one of the takeaways from this time together, because like you said, a lot of people think long-term care means nursing home care. But really, all it is simply a variety of services that help support individuals that have chronic illnesses or disabilities who really can't care for themselves for long periods of time. So this may be services that come, you know, into your home setting, wherever that may be, or it may be that an individual relocates in order to get the support they need. So all these definitions through our conversation are going to be important to think about. One of the ones that I think about really specifically is assisted living. And, you know, assisted living is a generic term that we use throughout the United States. But because there's no federal regulations for assisted living, what assisted living is in states are very different. So in Georgia, where I live, we have personal care homes, which are like assisted living, but it's more of a social model where if you need any kind of licensed nursing care, a person has to come into a personal care home from outside to provide that service. Where if you're in an assisted living community, then if they have an LPN, for example, on staff, then that person can do what they're licensed to do as a staff person. So a lot of it has to do with the state you live in and those guidelines. So the definitions are really important as a first place to start.
Exactly. And, you know, there's also independent living communities and also something called continuing care retirement communities, and which have all levels of care. So it's just important for our viewers to understand that there's different levels and you can't just group them the same. So that being said, how does a care partner know which one of these is right for their loved one with all these choices?
Well, you know, I think, again, it depends on what state you live in many times, but even like for continuing care retirement communities, which are going through a national name change, they're, you know, nationally, they're changing the name to life plan communities, because what we found is people are aging and they hear continuing care retirement community. A lot of people think, well, I don't need care right now, or I'm not really retired yet, and so this isn't for me. So there was a national think tank and a lot of marketing studies that happened to change the name to life plan community. So you'll want to look at both of those. And if you're interested in how that worked out and the whole scenario, you can go to lifeplancommunity.org, and it shares with you the whole background and history of that name change. So states will be rolling out that change in the future. In Georgia, we decided to do it as of January of this year. So we've been very intentional about rolling that out in our state at large. But taking life plan communities or CCRCs as an example, there's four different types of CCRCs, and different states recognize those types. For example, in Georgia, we only recognize three types of CCRCs. So it's really important to do your due diligence according to what state you're in, and really look at the contracts, because there's a lot of leverage in the way that the ways that organizations that they create their contracts. So, but most contracts for continuing care retirement communities have to do with the amount of nursing home care that's included in the contract. So there may be one type that says, you know, you pay this amount and we're going to take care of you until you die. And it doesn't matter if you're living independently in a two-bedroom cottage, or you're living in assisted living, or you really need skilled nursing care, we're going to take care of you for that cost. Then there's some types that are more of a fee for service. So you pay your entry fee, and then depending on the type of service that you need, those are then the fees are different prices. So if you just lived in an independent two-bedroom apartment or a two-bedroom duplex or cottage, then your fee would be a certain amount. If you lived in a one-bedroom assisted living apartment, then your fee would be different. So it's really important to look at those contracts. And these continuing care retirement communities, since they kind of mirror a long-term care product, in states, they're licensed, and the oversight is through the Department of Insurance, which is very different. And so the Department of Insurance, they require different things in different states about disclosure to consumers. So it's really important, because you may go to one CCRC and they may say, we offer these things, and this is how, according to our contract, that you either receive services where you are, or you may have to move to a different part of the community to receive services. And then you may go across the street to another CCRC, and their contract is entirely different on how that works. But let me say that there's a lot of confusion. There's many organizations that are calling themselves continuing care retirement communities around the United States, and they really aren't. And so some states are really paying attention to people that are advertising themselves as CCRCs that aren't, and some states are not doing anything. But really, the thing that you want to notice, if a person is a real licensed CCRC, the thing that to look for is that entrance fee. So when there's a significant entrance fee that may be $200,000 or $500,000, which is a one-time fee that you pay, that entrance fee is what determines if they need to be licensed through the Department of Insurance. So there may be retirement communities that offer all different kinds of services, independent living, assisted living, nursing care, but it's all you just pay the fee for where you live, and you don't pay a big entrance fee. And they may call themselves a continuing care retirement community, but really, just because they offer all the levels of care, they really shouldn't be calling themselves that. So there's a lot of due diligence that takes place on this, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine that you should probably have an elder care attorney, especially when you're looking at contracts, when you're entering into these agreements.
I think it's always good. I mean, you know, there's a lot of trusted sources that you would want to pay attention to. I'm not sure how many people actually use an elder law attorney for things like that. A lot of people, it's just like when we go out and buy a car, or even, you know, when you purchase anything, like even when you buy your cell phone, so to speak, you know, there's four pages of fine print, and we all just kind of sign off on it. But I think when we're dealing with a place that's going to be our home, and it has to do with our health, you really want to make sure that you understand what everything means. And I think even a consumer can sit down with somebody and I think we shouldn't be afraid to ask questions like, you know, this says this, what does it mean? I don't know if you would need an attorney to look at that or not. You know, I think it just has to do with your own comfort level.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you start searching? I know, you know, one time my mom was in Florida and she needed rehab care after a surgery. And so she needed to go to a skilled care. And, obviously there's something called Nursing Home Compare, if our viewers don't know that, to compare skilled nursing facilities. So that's one place to start. But as you said, assisted living is not nationally regulated. So where do you go for information? I know CCRCs, some of them are accredited through a certain body as well. So where do you go to maybe start the baseline search? Because there's so many options out there. And frankly, when I searched for mom, I was a consumer, less than a health professional. And right. I did narrow it down to three just from the Nursing Home Compare. And then we get into the next, you know, iteration of then what do you do? But, you know, where do you start?
Yeah. You know, I would say start by looking at as many different sources as possible. When you just look at one source, for example, you know, nursing homes and assisted living communities, they have surveys where state regulators come in to make sure that they're and those surveys are just to show that they're meeting minimal health and safety standards. So, you know, you would expect that to happen. But a lot of times the surveys are very misleading because there could be a community that just is not meeting the standards, but that has a pretty decent survey. And there could be some of the best places in town that for some reason, you know, somebody didn't file, put the blue piece of paper in front of the green piece of paper, or, you know, there was some small error with a medication or with a food piece of, food in the dining room or whatever that carried a lot of weight on the survey and they got dinged for it. So what you have to realize is when a surveyor goes in, it's just for one small period of time, one little segment of time on what somebody that's not very objective sees. And so, so you don't want to just look at a survey and say, well, this nursing home, for example, only has 2 stars, so I'm not going to look further. You know, I think there's a lot of conversations that should happen in a lot of different places. There's a Nursing Home Compare, there's surveys, there's actually, you know, nothing is better than going yourself and seeing if you feel at home there. You know, for some of us, when we go out to eat, you know, I want to go out to the scuzziest place where I can wear my jeans and a t-shirt and cross my legs and feel comfortable and, right. You know, that kind of restaurant where a lot of people want to go where they have to wear a sport coat and, you know, have your car valet parked and make sure they pay over $100 for their glass of wine. And that's what makes them feel comfortable. So we all have those things of what makes us feel good. And so when you go into to a place to look around, you know, a lot of us think, well, this place is really expensive and it's really pretty. So therefore, everything that goes on inside the walls is really great. And what we all have learned time after time after time is that it doesn't always mean that. So just because you're paying a lot of money and the place looks great doesn't mean that what goes on inside is really great. And likewise, I've seen in Georgia some nursing homes that when you drive up, the parking lot's kind of yucky, the outside of the building's not looking so great, but all of a sudden you walk in and it feels like home. I mean, you just see people, they're happy, they're engaged, the staff know, you know, the residents, and there's a lot of interaction and energy, and it's like, put me somewhere like that any day. And so we have to be really careful about what we think we see and then what we really see. So I would say as many sources as possible, also ask people. And remember, getting back to my, remember you take yourself wherever you go. And one of the things that I want to say that I think might be a little different is that our whole lives we've created our story for ourselves, and whoever, whatever we've created that to be, we take that with us everywhere we go. So if you're the type of person that goes into a restaurant and you feel relaxed and you like it, and you know it was kind of okay, but there was something that was your favorite thing, like the bread or the dessert, and you leave happy, you know, that's kind of who you are. You could be the type of person that goes into a restaurant and you find something wrong with it every time. So just remember that if you move into a retirement community or you're looking for retirement communities, you know, depending on who you are, depends on the experience that you're going to have and what you attract. So if you've always been the type that found fault with every restaurant you went in, you may find fault with the dining program in the retirement community you move in. So I think it's kind of an interesting thing to reflect on, you know, is the fact that we are who we are. And in planning, it's a good time to kind of review that, is, you know, what's important to me and what really brings me happiness and what makes me feel like I'm at home. Is everything in its place and being neat? Does that make me feel at home, or does kind of, you know, a blanket thrown here and a book open there and maybe my potato chips open on the whatever? Is that what's home to me? So there's a lot of things to think about.
Absolutely. You know, I was chuckling a little bit because, you know, you are who you are. So it's not like you're going to change the moment you enter into the, open those doors and something triggers. So it's, you know, my mother, I'm Italian descent, and she was a chronic complainer. But if she was complaining, that meant things were good.
Right. And a lot of times, you know, you don't know that, because I remember there was a family that the mother and daughter just screamed and yelled at each other all the time. And all the neighbors thought that they were, you know, fighting and mad at each other. And it's like, no, that's how we interact. And then, you know, like me, I come from a family where we just didn't talk to each other. So, you know, and then my spouse, they talk about each other in front of each other and all at the same time. So, you know, we all have different life experiences, but we take those everywhere we go. But that being said, you know, it's never too late to continue growing and challenging ourselves. And I think the awareness of what we've created for ourselves is so important as we all continue to age and think about really what is the story that we're repeating and telling. And, you know, is our glass half full or half empty? You know, do we think we're going to be, you know, victims and are suffering in old age? Are we excited about what we can do and how we build on our strengths and, you know, our legacy and really, you know, getting to know each other and be engaged in life? So there's so many things to think about.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you're involved in culture change, and culture is such a nebulous thing. When I was shopping for mom, and I did that, you know, nursing home compare and all the, you know, talk to the discharge planners and all the other things, the word of mouth, all the things I tell other people to do, you know, you can't beat going into the place at different times and whatever and see what happens. So we went into one where essentially the administrator was in a meeting or in a call, and we were basically left for 45 minutes waiting. Went into another place, and this administrator was on a call or a meeting, but they stopped the call, they stopped the meeting, they came out, and as we were touring, you just felt, as you were alluding to earlier, you just felt something about the place. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get mom in there the first time because it was full, but then she needed to go back for more rehab, and luckily she got in there the second time, and I felt good about it because I really think we had done our homework. But a lot of it is your gut, don't you think?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I wrote down to make sure that I said today, is that ultimately you have to go with how you feel. And you know how it is when you're at home, you just have that feeling. You feel comfortable, you feel safe, you know, you feel like that there's love there, whatever those things are that you feel like, you know, you want that to, you want to be at home. Maya Angelou says, one of my favorite quotes is, I long, as does every human being, to be at home wherever I find myself. And that could be in a mansion, a trailer park, a nursing home, assisted living, wherever it is, you want to feel at home. So having that awareness of what it is, you know, what are those pleasures? What do I enjoy? And I think your senses tell you a lot. You know, what do I enjoy? Do I like hearing music? Do I like hearing the sounds of nature? Do I like to smell things being cooked? You know, what are those things that, what do I like to see? Does it bring me joy to see, you know, children excited about life? Or does it bring me joy to be able to have contact with animals, you know, your dog, or hold a cat, or whatever those things are that you connect with? You know, we want to make sure that you can do those. If you're a person that sleeps late, you know, am I moving into a retirement community or nursing home assisted living that's going to allow me that pleasure of being able to sleep late? And likewise, if I'm a night owl, you know, if I'm up puttering around at midnight or wanting a snack or, you know, deciding to get a sandwich, do I have the ability to do that? Or is there, if I need some kind of support or help, is there somebody that will help me do that? And so, you know, who are you and what do you want, and how can you make sure that there's the opportunity for those things? And do you really have choices? A lot of times, you know, one of the big things in our field now is to give people choice, but many times you really don't have a choice. For example, there may be some kind of setting where they say you can have a choice of what you want to eat. You know, we have something on the menu, and then if you don't like that, you get the rubber chicken. You know, so like the bad chicken that you get many times in hotel banquets. So they say that's a choice, but that's not a choice. You know, a choice might be, I don't really like what's on the menu. You know, could I just have a grilled cheese sandwich, or spaghetti, or what about just some, you know, a fried egg, even though it's for dinner? Those are the type of choices, just like the decisions you would make at your home. Sometimes, you know, we eat, you know, a big piece of dessert an hour before we have our dinner. And we were all brought up, you know, don't do that. It'll spoil your dinner. But, you know, now that we're grown, we do those things sometimes. So if you decide you want to do that, is there going to be somebody that thinks they know better for you and says, no, you can't do that, or there's no dessert available, or you don't have access to it? So, you know, all those things that you can think about. And then when you're walking around and you're touring and you're asking people, you know, I think one of the big things that give you that gut feeling is, what am I seeing? When you walk into somewhere, do you see people that live there? Are they engaged? Does the staff know them by name? Are they interacting and having conversations? Or are staff walking past residents of different settings, like they don't even see them or know them? Or are they in conversation and community, and are residents being, is the environment being created for them to do what they want to do, like play games or cook or be outside? And, you know, one of our CCRC members just told me last week, he said, look at this picture. He said, one of our nursing assistants, there were four residents. It was a beautiful day, even though it was really hot here in Atlanta. But it was the end of the day, beautiful afternoon, and four of the residents in their nursing home setting wanted to eat outside. And the certified nursing assistant said, sure, we can do that. What do you want to do? And so, I mean, she went outside, set up a table, got their food, and these four women that were buddies, you know, had a nice little dinner at the end of the day outside on the patio. And somebody took a picture of it, and he was like, that's what it means to be at home. Just like we would, if it's a beautiful day, you know, let's have dinner on the patio, instead of being said, oh, we can't do that, the patio's not open, you know, all the excuses. It's like, do you see people doing the things that you want to do in your everyday life?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, it seems the visit is so important, and yet how can you observe all that just once? I mean, I would imagine you'd have to go several times at different times. Should you take a someone with you. If you're the care partner and you're going mom or dad, that's certainly one thing. Should you take a nurse, a geriatric care manager? Should you, you know, that's a lot to take in to absorb a culture. And I'm sure if somebody knows you're coming versus just dropping in, you're going to get a different, you know, show, so to speak, as opposed to, you know, I've been here three or four times now and it's all very consistent.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm purposely not saying a lot of things that you can Google, but, you know, you can go online and Google all kinds of questions to ask and things to look for. But I would think as many opinions and different sets of eyes, you know, even if it's a grandchild or, you know, somebody that's in a business, you know, like a social worker that might be a friend or somebody from your local congregation or a neighbor. Because, you know, it's just like when you watch those like Household International and they're getting ready to rent an apartment in another country and they take their friend and the person gets all excited, but the friend says, yeah, but you don't like that. Or, yeah, but there's no elevator and you got to walk up five flights of steps. What's that going to be like with your bicycle? You know, so a lot of times, you know, people that know you can help see things that you don't see, which are really good things or things that might be a red flag.
So, yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. So kind of winding down here, but there's a couple things I just want to hone in on a little bit. So, and this is from my own experience with my mom in an independent living community. Obviously, she was an Italian, loved to cook. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if people understand kind of just meals in places where you're basically catering to 100, 200 people at a time and how on one hand you want to be sensitive to the needs and their desires and maybe even incorporate their recipes and maybe they even participate somehow in the process. But there's also some realistic expectations in terms of, you know, diets and health conditions and serving masses. And I maybe just put a little bit of perspective because, as you said, if you complained about food in restaurants when you were, you know, during your life, you're probably going to still complain. But on the other hand, if you didn't, I've seen people who are very not much complainers who have complained about food in senior living. So just a little perspective on that.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting concept. And as you know, food is one of the biggest challenges because, you know, especially in the South, you know, we basically cook the hell out of our vegetables and it's real salty and greasy. So, you know, to have something crunchy, like a green bean that's crunchy or broccoli that's crunchy, you know, is just so offensive and we just can't deal with it. So, you know, there's all those things that you have to ask. And I think the reality of, you know, if you probably are touring and saying, you know, I have this really great recipe. Do you think that, you know, that is there ever opportunities to use it or how would that work? And of course that everybody will say, oh yeah, we do that and everything. And it's like, well, you know, can you give me an example of one time when you did that, you know? And it's like, oh yeah, Anthony's mother had this great Italian recipe and they cooked it and the residents loved it. And, you know, now we have that once a week or whatever that is. So, and I just toured a new community that's being open in our region last night. And they're using the household model and they actually have guides in every household, which is for 11 residents. And every, they have four different households and the whole kitchen and food thing is going to be determined by the residents there.
That's awesome.
So they cook what the residents that live, those 10 or 11 residents that'll be there, they cook what they want. And right next door in the next household, there may be an entirely different menu going on, but it's tied to, you know, what people want. So that's a really important point to ask is how are those things determined? You know, how is it determined what the programming choices are or the trips, you know, that the community might provide? Or how is it determined if the residents, you know, come together and have suggestions of changes that could happen, especially like with menu choices? And it's really important to be careful and really listen to what people are saying. So if staff are working, are there, and they're using words like, you know, like we allow them to do this, and they start talking about the residents as other type, you know, aliens or something, where they've already predetermined what it is, or they're allowing things to happen. It's like, you don't allow things to happen in your home. So if they say things like, you know, we create environments, we support residents, we look forward to, you know, getting new ideas. And so it's really, a lot of time in our field, it's really hard if you're a staff person, because you have these preconceived ideas on maybe, you know, what a person 80 years old or 90 years old or 95 should do, should not do, should eat, should not eat. And we basically can confine them and isolate them and take away their independence, really with good intention. So it doesn't always mean it's a bad thing. It just could be, you know, the intent is not to do that. But we think that we are taking care of people when we say, you know, you're unstable and you have a walker, so you shouldn't go outside because you might fall. When it's better for somebody to go outside and take the risk of falling because they were always an outdoor person. So, you know, all these questions and ideas, and it's basically be yourself, take yourself wherever you go. And one of the handout that our Consumer Center has developed, a lot of the reasons I didn't get into some of the typical programs and services and who's eligible for them and how they're paid for is that we have this handout through our Consumer Center, the Center for Positive Aging, for people that are participating in this Caregiver Summit. So it tells a little bit more about, you know, how things work and how they're financed, because that would have been not as interesting for us to talk about.
Absolutely. So I'll just hit one more thing, okay. But I think the answer will be sort of along the lines of the last question as well, is activities. You know, I was a healthcare professional my whole life, but I didn't fall into the mission for elders until I started singing in nursing homes. And now everybody sings in nursing homes. But, you know, there's this stereotypical throw them in front of the TV, or, you know, my mom, they had bingo 3 nights a week. And if they would schedule me on a bingo night, I would be in a lot of trouble when I got there. You know, it's almost like interrupting Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. So how much has that evolved and changed? Because I see some very progressive organizations, and I see some still stuck in whatever, the 90s, yeah, in terms of what they do.
Well, one of the interesting things I've been noticing, especially in larger retirement communities, maybe life plan, CCRC type communities, but even just retirement communities in general, is the whole programmatic piece in many places is just being really turned over to the residents. And even in some of the big retirement communities, they don't even have like an activities professional on staff anymore. You know, they have a resident group that has a certain amount of money, and if residents want to get together and, you know, say, you know, we want to start a club to play a certain game, you know, and we need a space and we want this, that, and the other, they just kind of, you know, put in a request to add that to the programmatic plan. And some of these communities have like over 100 different groups doing all kinds of stuff, and it's really focused on what people want. And one of the things we all know, that meaningless activity corrodes our spirit. So one of the things that our colleagues, Anthony, have shared with us, of our colleagues that are living with dementia, for example, you know, often get asked a lot of questions about, you know, what they want and how, you know, that they should help other people that have dementia. And so, you know, we all know that we need to eat right and we need to keep moving. And so, you know, one of our colleagues had a friend ask him, you know, I'm trying to get my husband to, you know, walk with me every day, but he doesn't want to walk. So what should I do? And the answer was, well, does he like getting out to walk? And he's like, no, he hates it. well, then that's not going to be what it is. Like, you know, I would hurt myself and others if I had to play bingo. I mean, I never liked it. I don't like it. And all of a sudden, I'm probably not going to start liking it. But, you know, there's other types of games that I would play all night long, you know. And so, again, it's finding what that is and what you enjoy, and make sure that there is opportunities for meaningful activity, and also that spontaneous. You know, a lot of times we see the schedule, and if we're at home and we decide to have a snack, you know, we are going to pop popcorn or make cookies or whatever. We don't say, oh, no, it's not, you know, snack time is on my activity schedule at 2 and it's only 1, or it's I missed it because it's 3:30. We do what we want to do. So, you know, how can you have that if you're moving into a retirement community? Are there still opportunities for spontaneity and to meet and group and do things? So any kind of activity and engagement is meaningful. And so asking people that work in those settings, what does that mean to them? You know, how is meaningful activity and significant engagement, what does that look like here? So a lot of times, you know, if we just call a person in and say, you've got to be nice to people, but we don't tell them what nice looks like, to them, nice might mean, I'm just not going to cuss at you when I see you, or I'm going to smile at you when I see you. Where nice you might be thinking, well, nice means that you actually speak to somebody and ask them how they're feeling today. And so, you know, I think when we're out there looking for places that's going to be our home, we have to say, you know, what does it look like here for opportunities to be engaged, or for me to make suggestions for, you know, my favorite recipe to be used or whatever. So I think it's a time not to be shy, and to realize that it is your home and your life, and to really just ask those questions.
Yeah, all great advice. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. So is there any last thoughts you want to offer?
Well, I think just to recap, you know, remember that it's you, that you take yourself wherever you go. And I think, and just to be really aware of what brings you joy. What are your simple pleasures in life? Because, you know, well-being is a big topic that we're talking about a lot in our career now. We've really moved from kind of a wellness conversation to a well-being conversation. And that well-being is, you know, how are we identified as who we are? How are we connected? And then how do we ultimately get to joy? And for us, you know, we want to be happy. People, human beings we're wired to be happy and engaged, and we have different ways that we do that. So being aware of what those ways are, but to make sure that you don't settle, that you don't play small, that you don't take a back seat, but that you're just very assertive and really articulating yourself on what brings you joy and what are those pleasures in life, and make sure that you get into a setting that honors that, honors you as a human being, and knows who you are, you know, and what your expectations are.
Awesome. Well, one of the pleasures of my life is knowing you as a colleague and a friend.
Likewise.
And I thank you for being part of the Caregiver Smile Summit.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity.
All right.
Yay.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. These are really just